It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we have conversations about important issues that affect you in your life. And it is Friday, Steve. It is one of your favorite days of the week.
Okay. I've been counseled before about my negativity song. Okay, yes, it's Friday. Yahoo.
Thank you for that cup is half full response to that. So, yes, indeed, it is Friday.
You know that cup is half full or half empty thing? An engineer would tell you that the cup is only twice as big as it needs to be. And then you solve the whole dilemma.
And then there's no more conversation about that, huh?
Right.
Okay. So we have an amazing show planned for you today. In segments 2, 3, and 4, we'll be talking with Dr. Patrick Moore. And he began his career as an activist leader in the Greenpeace movement. And he now concentrates on collaborative efforts aiming at finding environmental solutions that contribute to human flourishing while we are also responsible stewards of the earth. So it is going to be an important conversation. So that's going to be in segments 2, 3, and 4. And, you know, as we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, property, or freedom via force, whether with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. And under this whole climate change narrative, we see the public policy that is being used to control and take things away from people, and we see it in transportation, education, energy, housing, water, communication, data. And so that's why we do this show and talk about these important issues out there. So first of all, thank you, Steve. It's Friday. It's good to have you behind the glass. And thank you to the team, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your support and good work. And thank you to each of you listeners out there. You're treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose today. Strive for excellence and take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. And you can find all of our show recaps and podcasts at kimmunson.com. And that is spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And if you want to give me a comment, just email me at kim@kimmunson.com. So today, for our inspiration / wisdom, I went to Edmund Burke. And Edmund Burke was, as you probably know, an Anglo-Irish statesman and philosopher. He was born in Dublin, and Burke served as a member of Parliament between 1766 and 1794 in the House of Commons with the Whig Party after moving to London in 1750. So think, Steve, just think how long ago these words were said. I mean, it's just amazing. He says, when bad men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one, an unpitied sacrifice in a contemptible struggle. I thought that was very apropos for our discussion today.
Again, I sound like a broken record. Every time you do one of these inspirational things, is we notate how long ago the words were spoken and yet how applicable they are to today.
I know. It is just amazing. So
smart people.
Smart people. And we need to make sure that instead of discounting them, that we learn from them. Right, Steve? I mean, come on. So we should be teaching this stuff in our education system instead of this whole goofy thing about, you know, gender fluidity and all that kind of stuff. We should be, you know, teaching the great writers is what we should be doing. So for our funnies, though.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready for this? Okay. Girls who talk about girls' problems are great, but girls who talk about environmental problems are Greta. I've got two more. Are you ready?
Sorry, I thought, I thought that was it.
Okay.
You can't top that.
Well, maybe I can. Okay. I've heard all the environmental activist arguments for banning plastic products, but they're really just grasping at straws.
Oh, okay.
And lastly, this is just out. Headline, ranchers in Colorado are conducting a crucial experiment on the environmental sustainability of using hemp as a feed source for cattle. The stakes have never been higher.
You know, if we ever get tired of the drummer, he costs us too much. We just need a long groan, a groaner.
I thought that was a good one, too. So, hey, on Friday, I just like to, you hear throughout the week, you hear my sponsors, you hear their spots. I highly endorse each and every one of them that you hear. But as many of you know, and people are surprised, I'm a true entrepreneur. I buy my airtime for my radio shows. And so that means that my sponsors are the ones that help bring this to the air. And I always want to say thank you to each of them. So thank you to Karen Levine, RE/MAX Alliance Realtor, Jason McBride and the whole team at Presidential Wealth Management, Hooters Restaurants, Susan Cochevar with a historic 88 Drive-In Theater, the Harris Family, Liberty Oilfield Services, Jay Davidson, First American State Bank, Lauren Levy with Polygon Mortgage, Water's Edge Winery, Liberty Toastmasters, Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors, and Complete Colorado. I am so grateful for each of them. And if you are interested in talking to me about being a partner, just email me at kim@kimmunson.com. But I really appreciate all of these. And you know, Steve, you've really gotten to know almost all of our sponsors because we come in and they co-host. It's quite an impressive bunch of people.
Yes, it's been one of the perks here, getting to know these people and be on a first-name basis. They're all very, very interesting people, and the firms and the businesses and whatnot that they represent are very noteworthy, too.
Well, they're top of the line. So before we go to break, there were a couple of things. First of all, I saw this headline the other day that from CNN, Arctic cold to blame for at least 4 deaths, and the weather is only expected to get worse. But wait a minute. I thought that the planet's supposed to burn up in 12 years, Steve.
Well, we got smart now. We stopped saying global warming.
They changed the words.
Yes.
That's all they do is they change the words.
Because it was scorching their rear ends. So now we have climate change.
And to that point, one of our fellow producers, Matt, had sent this information to me. And so I'm just going to read a little bit of this, and you tell me what you think this is, Steve, okay?
Yeah, this is, take the time to read this, like this first paragraph here. We'll guess the year, but it is the perfect preamble to where we're going here with Patrick Dr. Moore here.
You got it. Okay. The year, fill in the blank, will long be remembered for the violence of its weather. The spring opened mild and delightful, but in June, a torrid wave of unparalleled severity swept over the country. The cities baked and gasped for breath, while the burning sun and hot winds withered the corn and cost the farmers $1 million a day. A little later, England was scorched and France and Germany sweltered. The mercury went above 100 degrees in western Canada, and whalers brought back reports from the Arctic regions of open water where always had before there been solid ice. The reports from Mexico and Central America would well describe the lower regions, but it is said that the summer in Iceland was quite enjoyable. Steve, what year do you think that is?
Well, this is your show. I'll let you announce it. I see it, but it would have more impact for you to tell us. What year was it?
1911. This is an article that was written by Francis Molina. It was published in Popular Mechanics in 1912, looking back at 1911. Does that not sound just about what we hear from the climate activists today? And bear in mind, this was really before we had started to use fossil fuels. In a you know, totally big way. I guess we were burning some coal, but you know, nothing, you know, like what is espoused today, Steve.
Well, I think it's one of the great fallacies of this whole thing that's going on today. And again, grab onto a topic that everyone's aware of, and it touches a nerve, it strikes a chord with them, and then politicize it, which is what's really happening here. But any really intelligent discussion will always go back to the point which this little paragraph that you just read makes, is that there are cycles.
There are cycles.
What we are seeing today is not the first time it's been seen.
So what they're using, it's actually called weather. And weather, you know, does move around. And it's amazing to me that that we can't predict the weather sometimes within the next 24 hours. How the heck do we think that these people can actually tell us what the temperature is going to be like in 100 years? So this article in 1911, I thought was just amazing.
You're not supposed to ask questions like that, Kim.
Well, I think that is really the question that should be on the table, and it is the question that we need to ask. And it's going to be a really interesting conversation. We've talked with Dr. Moore before. It's been a few years since I have talked with him. But he did a really important piece back in 2015 about how CO2 is actually helping humans flourish, helping the planet flourish. And so it promises to be a really, really interesting conversation, Steve.
Can't wait to hear it.
Okay, so this is Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show, and we're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Dr. Patrick Moore about this whole climate change, environmentalism. You will not want to miss this conversation. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, spelled MONSON.com. All these shows are archived there. And today is our Health and Hydrocarbon Show, which is brought to you by Liberty Oilfield Services. And I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. Patrick Moore. He is an author. He's written a book, Confessions of a Greenpeace Dropout, The Making of a Sensible Environmentalist. And we will be talking with him about a piece that he wrote in March of 2015, The Positive Role of Human Emissions of CO2. So, Dr. Moore, thank you so much for joining us.
It's nice to be with you, Kim.
So before we jump into just the real meat on this, you know, Greta Thunberg has been in the news a lot. She's this young woman who is just so concerned that we, the older generation, will be destroying the planet in a very short time frame. What do you think about that, Dr. Moore?
Well, I don't think it makes much sense to have a 16-year-old child lecturing us about something so complicated and profound as the whole global energy system and the climate change of the Earth. It just seems to me to be completely ridiculous, and her angry tirade at the United Nations was even more ridiculous. She should at least speak in a polite tone. So I really do believe this is entirely a manipulation. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger who took her to the international meeting in Poland, the climate meeting in Poland. And Al Gore has been involved with her. She's photographed many times with the executive director of Greenpeace International. So she is basically being used as a tool. And it's, you know, I get a lot of criticism, like you're a grown man and you're criticizing a child kind of criticism. Well, actually, I'm not so much criticizing Greta as I am the people who are using her. But this has been done all through history. Actually, the world's greatest tyrants have tended to use children as a shield, whether you look at the Hitler Youth or Mao Zedong or Stalin. The mass murderers have used children in this way. And when someone said to me, well, we're not talking about mass murder here. Actually, if we quit using fossil fuels tomorrow, the tractors wouldn't work. The food wouldn't be grown. And the people in the cities would starve to death by the millions and perhaps billions if we actually just stopped 85% of global energy overnight. And 10 years, which is what they seem to be calling for now, is pretty much overnight. So that's about what I think of REP.
Well, you know, and we're here in Colorado, and there our governor and our legislature is on a very aggressive path to get us to quote-unquote renewables. And I see that as significant cost, and I see that that could really be detrimental to the Colorado economy as well. But tell us a little bit about yourself. I've watched you throughout the years, but to give our listeners a history of just your journey on environmentalism.
Well, Kim, I was born and raised in a remote floating village on the northwest tip of Vancouver Island with no road to it. Everything was boats. So I grew up immersed in nature in the wild West Coast rainforest and didn't realize until I went to university or high school that I had this innate love for nature. And so I made life science my study for all my life. And so I ended up at the University of British Columbia. I found out about the word ecology before it was even used in the popular press. This is back in the 1960s. Environmentalism was a word that was starting to be used then, but ecology had not even been written down by anybody in the popular media. And I entered a PhD in ecology, and while I was doing that, I learned about this small group that was beginning to meet in the basement of the Unitarian Church in Vancouver to plan a protest voyage against U.S. hydrogen bomb testing in Alaska. I joined that group, and to make a long story short, I spent 15 years in the leadership of Greenpeace from 1971, when I helped found it, until 1986, when I had to leave because, beginning as a humanitarian-oriented group to save civilization from nuclear war, the environmental movement, my Greenpeace group included, drifted into a belief that humans are the enemies of the Earth, that we are basically the only evil species. And to me, that's way too much like original sin, and I'm just not into that. We are part of life and have evolved with the rest of life on this planet. And through ecology, actually, I grew up in a pretty agnostic household, but through ecology, I could see the mystery of nature in its infinity through all the different relationships among all the different aspects of it. So I think I always referred to myself back then as a born-again ecologist, with an understanding of how deep this situation is, and at the same time how easy it is to mislead people about the natural world, and this whole doomsday idea that is now pervasive, that fossil fuels are evil, people are evil, carbon dioxide is a toxic poison, when in fact carbon dioxide is the basis of all life on Earth, and that's where I've arrived in the previous couple of decades in understanding that this demonization of human civilization and industry and economy is a sickness of the mind, because I see now that people actually say, I see the world dying before my eyes. Now, I don't know how anybody can see the world dying before their eyes by looking out at nature, where the trees are growing on the hills. Yes, they get diseases too sometimes, and everything eventually dies, and I think a lot of people forget about that nothing lives forever. So when something dies, it isn't an indication that everything is going to die. And, you know, people think there's a mass extinction going on. Extinction rates have declined by about 90% just in this last century because people care about endangered species now. They didn't used to. It was only about 100 years ago that people started caring about endangered species, and as it turns out, we are the only species that cares about endangered species. No other species is worried about some other species going extinct. Well, I don't even know if they worry at all, but we do. And so I see this as an indication of our goodness, not that we're evil. And so I just can't buy any of that. And I guess I've been an optimist all my life. My good friend Rex once accused me of always having my glass half full, as I suppose his is half empty. I said, no, Rex, it's overflowing. It's not just half full. The beauty of nature and the miracle of life on this planet is enough to make my glass overflowing every day. And even when something negative happens, I don't get distraught or thinking that the world is going to come to an end.
Yeah, that is, first of all, that's really inspirational, Patrick. But the next thing, you know, I've been doing a number of these shows on health and hydrocarbons, which is brought to us by Liberty Oilfield Services. And there is a book out there by Alex Epstein about the moral case for fossil fuels. And it talks about how fossil fuels have actually helped people to flourish. So up until fossil fuels really came into being, you know, women spent a lot of their days going out and finding fuel to heat their homes and to cook over, and also to go and find water. And so with fossil fuels, that has freed up time so that women can go and do other things as well. So it's really helped women flourish. But when you mentioned that it's only been within the last 100 years that we have started to really address endangered species, you know, when you're just trying to survive, you can't think about how to protect an endangered species. But when we are flourishing, then that seems like the next thing that would happen. So I find it kind of fascinating that this care for endangered species happened just about the time that we as humans started to use fossil fuels.
That's a very good point, Kim. And I'm a big fan of Alex's. I've shared a stage with him, and we are in correspondence with each other and watch each other's comments. The way I put it is that fossil fuels, which most people don't realize is 85% of the entire world's energy supply, so like ending using them tomorrow would not be a good idea. Fossil fuels are responsible for three key things. How long we live today, medicine, of course, is another very important aspect in that, but fossil fuels play a big role. They also play an important role in our wealth, and that is what gives us the freedom to do what we want. And the third one is just personal freedom. We have the freedom to be able to travel all around the world, and more people are enjoying that privilege as time goes on. So it just boggles my mind that anybody could just say, oh, yes, we have to stop using fossil fuels in the next 10 years, and that'll be that. I mean, at least half the human population would die within a year if we did that, and there'd be no trees left on the whole planet. Just to think of the environmental effect of ending the use of fossil fuels, what would people use for fuel if there were no fossil fuels? They would cut down all the trees. I mean, that's the reason forestry was invented in the first place in Central Europe, was they had reduced the forest area down to less than 10% because wood was being used for heating every building, for smelting iron and copper, for glassworks, and for steam engines. And so it was about 250 years ago that right in the center of Europe, in Czechoslovakia and countries in that region, Germany too, that people learned to grow trees, because up till then you had not had to learn to grow trees because there were so many of them that they never ran out until then. Whereas with food, we started growing food for in agriculture 10,000 years ago because there wasn't enough berries and roots to feed the growing population, and the fact that people had started to settle into cities and not be nomadic as they had been forever before that. So, you know, this brings me to the subject of history, and I think one of the big problems is...
You know what, Patrick? Let's stop right there. Let's go to break, and then let's come back and talk about history. I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say. So this is Kim Munson.
Great.
This is the Kim Munson Show. I am talking with Dr. Patrick Moore, and we will be right back. Hey, before we go to break, we have Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management on the line. Jason, what do you think about carbon?
Well, sometimes I wonder, what did the trees breathe before man came on the earth?
Yeah.
I mean, where did carbon come from before that? Did the dinosaur smoke or...
Well, so your point is that plants live off of CO2, right?
Plants need to breathe, too.
Yes, they do.
I say. So, yeah, one thing that struck me when your guest talked about Greta Thunberg, boy, the first time I saw her, I was struck by, my goodness, this is a 16-year-old girl. How do you become so angry at the age of 16, because the first time I saw this gal, I mean, I see this her face is just twisted in just absolute rage. And I think it is awful, you know, that she is being used as a tool, as he says. And, you know, if she wants to lecture somebody about ruining her life, I think it's not too hard to figure out where to point the finger.
It might be the adults that have been telling her all this stuff, right?
Well, it may be. And, you know, I'm sure this is politically incorrect, but the first time I thought, I said, boy, her and David Hogg would make a great couple.
Well,
they must be the two angriest young people on the face of the planet.
And, you know, to that point, it's actually, I think these kids are being used by adults to push forward a specific agendas, and it's just really wrong to do that, Jason.
Well, I think it is. Where does it get the kids in the long run? Except, again, I mean, hopefully you're never that angry about anything in your entire life for more than a short period of time. But, you know, if that's going to become a crusade that starts at age 16 and sticks with you forever, I feel pretty sorry for you.
That's a pretty tough life.
Really
for sure.
Do. You know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, I watch Tucker Carlson sometimes, and he's been bringing up something recently that nobody's talking about planting trees anymore. Do you remember, you know, when we used to hear the environmentalist talk? It was more of a positive message, you know, go plant a tree, do something positive. Remember, they'd have the get-togethers where people would go and everybody would plant a tree. Now, that seemed like a pretty positive thing to me to do. It was a feel-good thing instead of a be-angry thing. And in planting a tree, well, there's all kinds of benefits to that.
But anger is something that PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties can use as they're trying to get elected.
So it motivates more.
Yeah, well, anger and fear.
I guess that's true. I guess the last thing I would point out is, you know, I still tend to respond more positively to a message that doesn't shake the finger at me and accuse me of being, you know, a horrible person. You know, I've seen a couple of commercials on TV recently for this organization called 4Ocean. Okay. And I don't know if you've seen them, Kim. It's just the number 4Ocean. And it's a couple of young guys on the commercial. And apparently what they do is they've got like a crew of boats that goes out, cleans up plastic and trash out of the ocean. And then they make bracelets out of it and they sell them. So you buy the bracelet for like $20 or whatever, and that helps contribute to their cause. But what struck me is there wasn't any of this finger shaking, you know, in their ad about you're bad, people are horrible, this group of people's horrible, and all this. It was just a very nice, positive message, kind of like plant a tree, let's do something positive. So I know this may be shocking coming from me, but I think that's a website that's worth looking at. The number 4ocean.com.
Well, and it's some guys doing something very creative to address a problem, and they're a business. It's not government. It's not government force. And I agree with you. You know, I think that we can, with creativity and innovation, we can solve many of the challenges that we have in our society today. But the PBIs, they want to use government control, and they never have to have results.
Well, that's true. Well, maybe these guys would be a good guest for your show sometime.
I think that we should do that. Jason McBride, you're always coming up with some great ideas. So thank you so much, and we will talk to you then on Monday.
Sounds great. Have a great show, Kim.
And be sure and check out airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. All of Jason and his team's podcasts are there and all the information on how to get a hold of him. So we'll talk to you on Monday.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated 3 times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And all these shows are archived there. I'm thrilled to be talking with Dr. Patrick Moore. He is the author of Confessions of a Greenpeace Dropout, The Making of a Sensible Environmentalist. And we'll be talking about this piece that he wrote in March of 2015, The Positive Role of Human Emissions of CO2. Patrick, before we went to break, you mentioned history. So where do you want to take that from here regarding human history?
Well, I would even say history of the Earth, because, you know, people don't realize how long 4.6 billion years is, but that's how old the Earth is. Now, we don't need to go back that far to start understanding things that would be relevant to us now, but I would say 540 million years would be a good place to start, and that is when the Cambrian explosion of life occurred in the sea. For 3 billion years, life had been unicellular, microscopic, and confined to the ocean. And indeed, this explosion of life, multicellular creatures emerging in the sea, occurred about 540 million years ago. And it was all in the ocean still. It wasn't until 100 million years after that that species came on the land. Probably first the insects and the plants, followed by the vertebrates, which were basically a fish coming ashore and growing legs over a period of many thousands of years. And if we start there and look at the evolution of life since then, we come through a number of extinctions and the dinosaur age and the huge extinction that occurred then, the most recent major extinction 65 million years ago, almost certainly now known to have been caused by an asteroid hitting Yucatan and puncturing through the crust of the Earth and throwing a vast amount of magma, of volcanic material, up into the atmosphere, which blacked out the skies for enough years to basically prevent enough photosynthesis to support the life. And over 50% of all species went extinct at that time. And then life again flourished after that. And today, actually, in this era, biodiversity is higher than it has been. The number of species on Earth is higher than it has been in the history of life. It's been a constant upward curve of differentiation of species. It's such a powerful force that even after a massive extinction, it comes back again even stronger than it was before the extinction. So when people talk about the fragility of life on Earth, like as if 1 degree Celsius or 2 degrees Fahrenheit increase is going to kill half the species, it's so ridiculous. This Earth has been through cataclysms that are, we can't even imagine what they were like. We are living in one of the calmest periods in the history of the Earth now, this last 10,000 years in the interglacial period that we happen to be in. And a lot of people don't realize that they think the Ice Age ended when the last interglacial began, when the last glacial period came to an end. But there's been about 40 glacial periods within this Pleistocene Ice Age that we are in now. And actually, the Earth is colder now than it had been for the previous 250 million years, because the Ice Age before this one was the Karoo Ice Age, which lasted for 50 million years at least. This one's only 2.5 million years old, the one we're in now. It could last another 50 million years. But in between that, for the 250 million years between them, it was the hothouse climate, where everything was tropical. The Arctic islands of Canada had giant camels roaming in subtropical forests just 3 million years ago, before the onset of this Pleistocene ice age. And actually, we're at the tail end of a 50-million-year cooling period now. Back close to just after the dinosaurs went extinct was the Eocene thermal maximum, where the whole world was warm. There was no ice anywhere for millions and millions of years. So if people could just look at the, you know, the internet will take you to all these facts. You just need to start looking at it. Look at climate graph for the last 100 million years, or, you know, just start going in there. And once you get in there, you will see how you can go further. It's easy. It's just a few words gets you so much information these days. And that's what I would like people to do, is to learn something about the Earth's history and get a perspective, because everybody's talking about the last 50 years or the last 100 years. You can't determine the way the climate of the world is going to go just by looking at 50 years. And so that's what I think about history.
Well, and, you know, speaking of that, Patrick, right here in Colorado, you know, in the foothills, we have found fossils of woolly mammoths, which meant that there was an ice age here. And just recently, there was a new reservoir that was created in Douglas County, and I went out to take a tour of that. And as we were driving by, I said, oh, what's that? And they said, oh, that is a fossil of a palm tree. And so I just think that it's important to understand that we had woolly mammoths, and we also had a tropical forest right here in Colorado. And the idea, you know, we couldn't get the weather right last week on what exactly was going to happen. I wonder, I think it's actually almost arrogant to think that we can say what the temperature is going to be in 100 years.
Well, it's just plain silly. They actually are wanting us to think that they have an actual crystal ball, which is a mythical object, just like the Holy Grail. It's not a real thing. And like the Fountain of Youth, you know, do people think there really is a crystal ball that you can predict the future with? Of course not. There are computer models, which are the output of which is entirely based upon the input into which. They're a mechanical thing. They're not able to deal with chaos. They're not able to deal with the multifactorial, non-linear universe that we are in. You cannot predict the future. It's simply not possible. People can make guesses about the future, and every once in a million times, they're going to be right about something. But to say that we know exactly what the trajectory of the global temperature is silly. Now, we should expect it to warm a little bit for another 200 years. There's a 1,000-year cycle that is very clear in the recent record. By recent, I mean the last 5,000 years. The Roman warm period was 2,000 years ago. The medieval warm period was 1,000 years ago. Then the little ice age came and made it so cold that all the Vikings had to leave Greenland, which they had been farming for quite some centuries. And the little ice age peaked around 1700. That's what the lowest temperature. That was actually the lowest the Earth temperature had been since we came out of the last glaciation, so 10,000 years. That was the coldest we've been in the little ice age. And now for 300 years, it's been warming slightly, a degree 0.1 or something like that in Celsius, that is, about close to 2 degrees Fahrenheit. And we should expect it to warm a little bit more over the next 200 years. But then there are ups and downs within these larger cycles. So during the 1960s, we had a cold period. Going back to the 1930s, was probably the warmest it's been since the Little Ice Age. The U.S. in particular had higher temperatures recorded in the 1930s in the Dust Bowl era than it has had ever since. And they keep going on about the warmest year in history. That's because they go back and adjust the old numbers just arbitrarily, as far as I can see, by, but So it looks like it was colder before, and it looks like it's warmer now. But that's a whole other issue. The fact of the matter is we can't predict the future of the global climate, and if it got a little bit warmer, it would be better. I'm from Canada, living, thankfully, on the west coast by the sea, where we have our warmest climate. But Canada is the coldest country in the world. Its average temperature is minus 5.35 Celsius. That is really cold. And only 4.8% of Canadian land, the second largest country in the world, is arable, i.e. suitable for growing food crops. 4.8%. If it was warmer in Canada, we would have a much larger area of land that was capable of growing food. And the same for Russia. And most of the land is in the temperate northern hemisphere. If you look across the globe, you'll see that Russia and Canada occupy a fairly large swath of country, most of which is not suitable for growing food because it's too cold. That's the only reason it's not suitable. And the other thing we know is that when the Earth warms up in the greenhouse ages, it warms more at the poles than it does at the equator. As a matter of fact, at the equator, it doesn't change that much at all. So basically, it goes from a situation where there's a huge difference between the equator and the poles being frozen to a situation in which there isn't that much difference in the temperature between the pole and the equator, you know, less than half as much difference. And so it would not be a bad thing even for the hot countries if we had a fair amount of warming in the world, because the warming would be inordinately towards the poles rather than at the equator itself. This is a known fact from historical records, and so it's not as if everybody's going to fry in Brazil. And besides which, for some reason, Canada and Sweden seem to be the countries most worried about global warming, whereas Brazil, Ethiopia, and India don't seem to be too concerned about it. Now, how could that be? The coldest countries are most worried about warming, and the warmest countries are not so worried about warming. I don't get it.
Well, I don't get it either. And let's go to break. This, Dr. Patrick Moore, this conversation is going so quickly, but I'd like to talk to you about why. Why are do we have, I'm calling them politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, PBIs, why are they using all this policy regarding quote-unquote climate change? I just want to get your read on what you have to say about that. So let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. We'll be right back with Dr. Patrick Moore.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and I am having a conversation with Dr. Patrick Moore. He is the author of a book, Confessions of a Greenpeace Dropout, The Making of a Sensible Environmentalist. And he's also the author of a very important piece that was published in March of 2015, the positive role of human emissions of CO2, carbon dioxide. And this is our Health and Hydrocarbon Show brought to you by Liberty Oilfield Services. And Dr. Patrick Moore, this is a fascinating conversation. So let's jump right in here with the why. What is the why on all of this climate change narrative that's going on out there?
Well, first, we have to separate science and politics. This is not about science. It's about politics. And politics is about power and money. And this is all about power and money. And really, five key elites in our society today who are benefiting from this scare story. First, the green movement. They want to raise funds. The best way to do that is to tell people they can save them from disaster if they send money. Then there's the media, which likes to get hold of those scare stories and magnify them even further, and that's how they make their revenue, their advertising revenue. And then there are the politicians, especially on the left, who are willing to pay scientists to buy fear in order to tell the people they can save them from the horrible calamity that's about to occur. And so people are made to feel afraid that driving their SUV, they're killing their grandchildren, and it makes them feel guilty too. So fear and guilt added up make you take your wallet out and give people money to save you. And so it's all about saving people and saving the earth, and how all these great people, and then the scientists, of course, are feeding the mill with what is purported to be science, but which in most cases is just a lot of silliness. I mean, it really is. Today I saw a piece, Scientific American, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, has gone off the deep end on this thing too, and because there's money in it and there's prestige in it. They're saying that the Earth has stopped greening 20 years ago, because the truth is the carbon dioxide we're emitting from using fossil fuels and making cement, which is about 5% of our CO2 emissions, that is causing a fertilization of all of the forests and all of the farmlands and all of the wildlands around the world. And this has been proven by NASA, by NOAA, by the Australians, by the Europeans, with satellite measurements of the amount of photosynthesis that is taking place on the Earth. It's very clear the Earth is greening. And there is a bunch of people trying to debunk that by just saying it's not happening. But actually, it's proven that it is happening. And then you have the green businesses, crony capitalism, rent seekers, wind and solar. Basically, wind and solar are parasites on the larger economy. They, in the final analysis, takes more energy to make them than they will ever produce in most of the places where they're being installed. So it is actually a negative, net negative energy source in most parts of the world. I mean, look at what's happening in Germany now, where they've invested hundreds of billions of dollars into wind and solar energy. They are going into a recession, very much partly because of that. And the whole rest of the world would go into a recession if it built up that much wind and solar energy as well. And this idea that there's going to be 100% renewable energy is insane. It's actually physically impossible for that to happen. But they're counting on some new batteries to be created that won't cost a fortune and will last forever, which is very unlikely to occur. At the same time, rejecting nuclear energy and hydroelectric energy, which if they wanted to emphasize low carbon dioxide emissions, those would be the technologies that you would focus on. Now, hydroelectric is not available everywhere. The U.S. is pretty tapped out on the sources of hydroelectric energy. There are other countries that have a lot more to tap into, China and India, for example. But nuclear can be built anywhere, and China is right now building 25 nuclear plants. India is building a bunch. Russia's building a bunch. Those three countries are now way ahead of the United States in nuclear technology. They're not afraid of it. No one died from the nuclear accident in Fukushima. No one died at Three Mile Island. And the Chernobyl accident, which only killed 86 people, I mean, I know it's 86 people, but it's infinitesimally small compared to other energy technologies, and gas lines blowing up and oil platforms catching on fire and all the other stuff that does happen in the real world, nuclear is the safest of all the technologies we have in terms of its history of causing casualties. So there's no sense whatsoever to the way people are talking about this on that side of the fence. They are completely bonkers, because the fact of the matter is carbon dioxide is the basis of all life on Earth. That's what plants use as their primary food. And it was getting lower all the time over the last 150 million years. CO2 in the atmosphere has been in a steady decline. That is because the shelled creatures in the sea, what are called the calcifying marine species, that make protective shells for themselves out of calcium and carbon dioxide, they are sucking the carbon dioxide out of the sea, which in the final analysis sucks it out of the air, because the air provides the CO2 in equilibrium with the sea. These creatures, all the coral reefs, all the shellfish, all the crabs and shrimp, and all of the microscopic organisms that make shells for themselves, which are the foraminifera and the coccolithophores. Look them up. Coccolithophores are actually one of the most beautiful species on Earth, and they're microscopic, so you can't see what they look like unless you look at a microscope picture of them on the Internet. And those are taking the carbon dioxide out of the environment and putting it on the bottom in shale sediments. That's where the oil and gas comes from, is from the marine sediments that were deposited over the millions and millions of years. Most of the coal, of course, comes from forests being trapped in sediments. But the oil and gas is largely from marine sediments in this shale, where the carbon is lost to the global cycle on a continuing basis. So what we have done is we have actually restored a balance to the global carbon cycle by ending the steady decline, which is actually, if you go back 500 million years, CO2 was 10 to 15 times higher than it is even today with what we've done. And we are restoring a balance to that cycle so that life will continue on this planet. Because life requires CO2 to be at least 150 parts per million. It's amazing that something can survive on 150 parts per million, which is 0.015%. I mean, it's such a small amount that people don't realize that. I think people think there's the atmosphere is largely made of CO2 because of our emissions, but it's only at 0.04% even today, and that is still a starvation level for plants. So plants were going to starve eventually if we didn't intervene and put some CO2 back into the atmosphere where it came from in the first place. All of the carbon in all the fossil fuels was once carbon dioxide in the atmosphere or in the ocean. It isn't as if we're inventing this stuff. It had to get in the fossil fuels by a plant absorbing it and making it into a carbohydrate. And then it turned into a hydrocarbon under heat and pressure under the sea and under the earth. And the fact of the matter is, all that carbon in all those hydrocarbons, those fossil fuels, came from the air and the water in the first place. It's not as if we're putting something into the atmosphere that was never there before. It was all there before, and CO2 levels were much higher before, double, triple, quadruple, 10 times at one point in known history, half a billion years ago. So these marine calcifiers, which didn't evolve until about half a billion years ago, have been steadily over the centuries and millennia pulling carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and putting it on the bottom of the ocean in the form of carbonaceous rocks, calcium carbonate. That is what limestone is. That's what we make cement from. That is what marble is. That is what chalk is. The White Cliffs of Dover are made from the skeletons of coccolithophore plankton, microscopic plankton. There are hundreds of millions and billions of tons of these substances in the Earth's crust, all of life origin, all made by marine calcifying species, taking CO2 out of the global carbon cycle and sequestering it in the deep ocean and in the deep sediments on the land. That's my story.
Wow. Dr. Patrick Moore, this is absolutely fascinating. We've got a lot more information that we need to cover, so let's. I'll get you back on the show. This has been really, really interesting.
Anytime, Kim. Just be glad to do it.
Okay, and where can people get your, what is your website? Where can they find you?
My website is ecosense.me, but best to go to EcoSense Now, at EcoSense Now on Twitter. You can follow me every day because I'm pretty regular, and I'm basically covering the whole environmental subject. Climate is a big part of it, and it's all about information and all about, you know, showing people where the arguments are wrong and where the arguments are right. And it's all about science, a little bit about politics, of course, because there's politics involved. But at EcoSense Now is my Twitter handle, and ecosense.me is my website.
Well, fantastic. So I will start to follow you on that. Dr. Patrick Moore, thank you so much. And we'll get you booked again.
Thank you, Kim. Take care.
And our quote for today is from Edmund Burke. He says, "No power so effectually robs the mind of all its powers of acting and reasoning as fear." Today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry.